I'm Rita Cheruti. I'm with the Department of Environment and Climate Change Canada, and I'm currently the Canadian co-chair of the Climate and Clean Air Coalition. And just so you know, I'm here today with Helena Moline Valdez, who is the head of the Secretariat of the Climate and Clean Air Coalition. I'm going to say CCAC for short.
Thank you for coming here today, too. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm heading up the Secretariat of the Climate and Clean Air Coalition, and I'm here also because our head office from the United Nations Environment is in New York and is supporting the work we are doing on sustainable development and climate.
Cheruti?
Yes.
Ms. Cheruti, can you tell us, what was your message today?
Well, I think we're here at these meetings today because the focus is on climate and the sustainable development goals. And clearly, we know that it is incredibly important to have drastic cuts in carbon dioxide in order to be able to go towards the temperature goals of the Paris Agreement. However, just reducing CO2 will not do that, will not take you to those temperature goals. And that's why it's very important to also consider reducing short-lived climate pollutants. And that's why we're here today, and that's why I am implicated with the Climate and Clean Air Coalition.
Just so we, people listening to us can understand what you mean by that.
What are they exactly? So, you know, everybody knows what CO2 is, right? It's the gas that needs really drastic cuts when you're trying to meet the goals of the Paris Agreement. It's in the Paris Agreement. And CO2 is what's called a long-lived gas. So it stays in the atmosphere for a really long time. So you reduce it today, but you necessarily don't feel the impacts for quite a while. Short-lived climate pollutants are different. Short-lived climate pollutants are things like methane, like some hydrochlorofluorocarbons, and like black carbon. These are gases and substances that stay in the atmosphere anywhere from a matter of 10 days to a couple of decades. So what happens in that case is that if you reduce them, you feel the impacts a lot quicker than if you were going to reduce longer-term greenhouse gases, which I'm not saying we don't have to reduce. We obviously have to reduce those. All I'm saying is that the impacts are felt practically right away. And that's the benefit of reducing these short-lived climate pollutants as complementary reductions to what we need to do to reduce greenhouse gases. And this is why the work of the coalition, of the CCAC, is incredibly important.
What would be your message in terms of how we as a community, a global community, can help?
I think governments are committed to the Paris Agreement, and we have to be ambitious about that. And all the governments that have ratified the early ratification of Paris points us in that direction. So there's no question about being ambitious. I think everybody understands that. I think the question for others is, what additional help can we get in being ambitious? How can we move towards meeting the temperature goals of the Paris Agreement in a way that is cost-effective, that is immediate, and for which technologies and cost-effective technologies are actually available right now? And I think that's the message, is that through this coalition that we have, and it's really all it is, it's a coalition of governments, intergovernmental organizations, NGOs. Really, it's not a government-led thing. It's a voluntary coalition of multi-stakeholders who talk different languages, but all have the same goal in mind, and that is, how can we make progress? And so the message would be, reducing short-lived climate pollutants not only helps you make progress towards your temperature goals, but it actually also helps you meet many of the sustainable development goals that we're talking about today.
If you can just tell us, how far along has the coalition been able to advance? Like, what are some of the positive benefits that you've already seen?
So one benefit is that we have managed to work on multiple benefits, something that is very necessary both to reach the Paris Agreement and the Sustainable Development Goals, bringing health to the forefront of combating air pollution. The health benefits are critical, but there is also critical benefits on food security, because some of the short-lived climate pollutants and many of the air pollutants as such also hinders crops to grow, and nutrition in crops are much less from ozone, which can also be the result of methane, for example. So that's one of the achievements that we believe that we have contributed to. And in addition, we have been working on very practical transformational changes in sectors such as, for example, cleaning up the diesel, using low sulfur diesel instead of the heavy duty diesel vehicles that currently circulate in a big part of the globe. We have been working on transforming the bricks, traditional bricks production, which is one of the bigger contributors to air pollution in many countries, and Kathmandu is just one example that we have seen up front recently on the news. We have worked with the Global Alliance on Clean Cookstoves and others to improve access to affordable and clean cookstoves that also take into account black carbon. Indoor and outdoor air pollution kills prematurely more than 6 million people per year. That's a huge number, and we have calculated with our scientists that we could save at least 2.4 million premature deaths per year only by implementing 16 specific measures to reduce black carbon from this type of measures that we focus on.
And one thing that is important is we talk about the implementation of the Paris Agreement as a historical event. Another historical event that took place in 2016 was also the adoption of the Kigali Amendment to reduce HFCs. And that's historical because with just that measure, you can actually reduce up to 0.5 of a degree in temperature by the beginning of the next century. That is huge. That's significant. And so the CCAC, the Climate and Clean Air Coalition, had an important role to play in getting that political momentum to getting that amendment, and also in exploring alternatives to HFCs. Very important on the ground.
If you can remind us what HFCs are again.
HFCs are hydrofluorocarbons. They are alternatives to HCFCs, and previous to that, CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons, which are used, yes, they are ozone-depleting substance, replaced by a substance, HCFCs, which is less ozone-depleting, and then HFCs, I think zero ozone depletion. However, it has a huge global warming potential, much, much bigger than, hundreds of times bigger than CO2.
How do we use them in everyday life?
Well, they are in refrigeration,
air conditioners,
yes.
Foam to combat fires. That's the main biggest.
So you can see with a growing middle class, with temperatures that are increasing all the time, with people wanting access to air conditioning, with supermarkets looking at different ways to try and cool their food, big challenges but big opportunities for reductions there.
And just to add on one additional aspect that I heard many delegates speak about, which is good for climate and it's also good for economy, and it helps reduce some of the pollutants for keeping the air clean, and that is energy efficiency. So more energy efficient buildings, more energy efficient air conditioning, refrigerations and other appliances that we use at home will help us both for our domestic economy. We need less electricity, and it will also help because we need less chemical substances in these appliances to be effective. So that's another win-win for climate and sustainable development.